You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 4 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Dr. Kerr Ramsey, who's the Senior Vice President of Enrollment at High Point University, a private university in North Carolina. You'll hear him talk about how High Point is using print and email differently, why enrollment marketing gets a bad rap, and what the future of enrollment might look like. Let's meet Dr. Kerr Ramsey.
I'm one of those unique people who has had a full career in enrollment. The stereotypical story of a tour guide in college, first job out of college was as an admissions counselor, and have worked now at three different institutions, two of which from which I've graduated, and then High Point University. I was incredibly fortunate as an undergraduate to be a part of a leadership development program where my small group leader at the time was the president of the college. And he had come up through admissions at small colleges and then larger national universities. And I just thought he was a really great guy and had a pretty amazing job getting paid to live on a college campus, and thought getting to talk to high school kids for the rest of my life and getting to be a part of a college community sounds like a pretty amazing way to live. Had the chance to get started right after college and have now been doing it for, this will be my 19th year in enrollment.
So tell me a little bit about your current role and your current institution.
I currently serve as the Senior Vice President for Undergraduate Admissions at High Point University. High Point is a medium to large liberal arts university in High Point, North Carolina, about 5,000 undergraduate students and 1,000 graduate students. High Point's a really special place. We're one of the fastest growing institutions in the nation. And I think that's because we have a pretty unique outlook on education. We recognize that all of our students have a cell phone in their pocket that gives them access to all the information in the world. And we, as an institution of higher education, have a responsibility to do more for the students than give them access to information and quiz them on their ability to recall it. We invest heavily in the experiences of students during their time here, making sure that they have internships, that they are very focused in project-based learning, that they're applying weekly what they're learning in terms of theory. But even more importantly, that we spend time investing in who they become, even over and above what they become. You know, we're a school that believes that character really matters. We're a values-based institution, and we make sure that our prospective students and current students are well aware of that, and they respond in incredible ways. They volunteer over 110,000 hours every year. They generally raise around $1 million for charity annually, and we don't require any of it. It's just we set a high expectation in students. They jump over the bar every single year, and it's amazing. The fourth piece of what makes High Point really special is that we are the premier life skills university. We know that success after college depends more on students' ability to communicate, to have the right mindset, to go out in the world with an excitement about learning new things, having, as Robert Safian, former editor of Fast Company, said, a figure-it-out mentality, having a strong set of values, having clear goals on who they want to be, and having the ability and desire to go do it and be successful. And it's just incredible to see what our students are able to accomplish.
I'm curious about your senior vice president role. That means a lot of different things at a lot of different institutions. The way I want to ask it is, like, how many degrees of separation are there between you and an admissions counselor? And how dirty are your hands getting in the world of enrollment and admissions?
So senior vice president here at High Point, going up, I do report directly to the president of the institution. Within our team, I'm really fortunate to have Director of Undergraduate Admissions, our Director of Training and Development, our Associate Vice President of Operations, and our Director of Campus Visits and Events, who report directly to me. Admissions counselors all report to a group of associate directors who report to the Director of Admissions. So they're two levels between me and the admissions counselors. However, I interact with them all regularly and daily, and I don't get to spend as much time one-on-one with students as I used to, but I'm fortunate in that my office is right across the hall from one of the rooms in which we meet with families, and so I do get to see folks coming and going and pop in and say hi, and counselors are nice to let me talk to their families every now and then.
The reason I ask, at different institutions, the senior vice president is like, oh, that person that we know their name and I've seen their headshot on the website, but I've never seen them interacting with families. And then there are the ones that are handing out bags at open house days and all of that. Just wanted to get some context there. And then you said fastest growing institution in the country. Any numbers that you'd like to share about how quickly that growth has taken place?
When I arrived in the summer of 2013, High Point University had 1,100 freshmen. This current freshman class was 1,441. Total enrollment has grown from when I arrived in 9 years ago, just over 3,000 total students, and now we're at six. So significant growth in graduate and professional programs, for sure, especially in the health sciences. We've added PA, PT, pharmacy, athletic training. We've just announced a school of dental medicine and oral health that'll open next year. There's some other exciting graduate programs coming, and the undergraduate level nursing starts this coming fall. So we have grown in size of students. The campus continues to grow as well, and certainly the programs we're offering continue to grow.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about enrollment marketing. What are some recent marketing wins or successes that your school has seen?
For us, the only way to measure marketing wins is in enrollment. So if enrollment goes up, marketing gets some credit for that. We really take to heart being ranked one of the number one most innovative college in the South. And that's certainly in our student experience on campus, in classrooms, in their residence halls, in labs, facilities, for sure. We think it also has a lot to do with the mindset and that different approach to education that I've already discussed. But we also wanted to be part of the student experience. And we believe that students should have some control over their own admissions process. We talk about students submitting their application, but I think at most schools, it's really not. It's some sort of guess at what the school wants the application to be. And the second students click submit, it's no longer theirs anymore. Students are given maybe a choice of visit or not visit and don't get a chance to be a part in designing that experience. Students are given the opportunity to come to a website that may or may not have information that they want. And that's an old model that doesn't work anymore. Students are used to everything fast, and even better, they're used to Amazon and everywhere else they shop on their phones, recognizing what they care about and immediately putting back in their Instagram feed a reminder of the things that they looked at and didn't purchase. That's normal. Mm-hmm. And ways expected. That's the kind of experience we want our students to have. We want them to know that we're paying attention to what they care about, offering them content based off of their interests, recognizing that can't be a one-time thing because interests change over time. We know somewhere between 60 and 80% of American college graduates change their major from when they apply to when they graduate. And that's while they're in college. Think about all the changes that happen junior and senior year of high school. Walking with students through this process, through college search sites, through our website, through digital marketing, through video content, which we know is so important, through virtual programming, both live and recorded, through virtual campus visit experiences. We basically want students to have access to what they want to have access to.
What channels are y'all utilizing for marketing that you feel are most effective?
The short answer is we don't really know. This gets into the interesting world of what is privacy and what is not, and how much do we know and how much don't we? At the moment, all the channels that we're using, we feel to be effective based off of what we're seeing in terms of aggregated usage and results from within those different channels. If something's not effective, we have stopped using it. It feels weird at the moment where it's both a shotgun, right? You've got to be everywhere, but there are so many different ways to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. You also have to be really specific within that. And we've identified some great partners who have helped us create some content that we think is effective. StudentBridge has been fantastic with helping create videos and making it accessible for students and giving them to go through that process. We've actually incorporated that into our campus visit experience as well, and having a touchscreen kiosk when people check in for their visits to scroll through videos, which has been a really popular way for families to start tours. So having access both from home and from campus, we've found virtual tours are great and helpful, and students appreciate that. What I like is that we hear from students that even as good as the virtual tour was, it's even better on campus. And that's something that's important to us.
Something that you mentioned was any channels that aren't working, we don't utilize those anymore. What are those channels that you have broken up with?
I'm going to disappoint some people. The answers are not email and print. we still think there's a really big place for both of those in this world. We're using them, we hope, smarter and differently to break through the noise for print, for sure. You know, email is still incredibly effective. And when we see open rates from 50 to 80%, depending on where students are in the funnel, it's hard to say that it's not effective anymore. Mm-hmm. And certainly if you're emailing parents, your open rates are even higher and it can drive results quickly. Most of what we've dropped have been partner sites from the past who may have been effective previously, but aren't anymore, that didn't adapt, haven't changed, and as students and the industry have. And some of the ways in which we used to acquire names that aren't as effective as they used to be.
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out three case studies in the show notes featuring three schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond. You speak highly of email and print. If you could only have three channels to communicate with prospective students, would those two fall in your top three? And what would be the third?
Web. And that's number one, because that's where students have the most control and get the most content. And that's what this is all about. It's about content. And heck, that's why every campus is adding content creator roles, to be able just to have this amalgamation of whatever students want, so they can access it whenever they want it.
I also agree that I think email is a really important channel. And I think that in higher ed, there's a lot of fear of overwhelming students' inboxes. But if you look at an industry like e-commerce, it's all a numbers game. Nike's going to send you 6 emails a day, and they don't care if they get a 3% open rate, because 3% of 10 million is, I shouldn't have done that, I don't know that number, but whatever it is, it's a numbers game. It's top of mind, it's reminding, it's just staying in the inbox.
Think about your own inbox, right? How many emails do you get every day from the same people? And do you read them every day? No, I don't know if you're one of those people, right, who does the checkbox delete, or if you're a regular swiper, or you're one of those crazy people who just lets them build up in the inbox and you've got 10,000 unread messages.
God, no.
But every now and then you click on one of those, and they've clearly taken a strategy that they want to be in your inbox at the moment that you want to engage. And they're not willing to take the risk to only send you 3 emails a week. And on the day you have a moment, on the day you need a brain check from something else, on the day that you can get to it, that they're not there and somebody else is. And how often do you unsubscribe from those? Rarely.
I'm actually a big unsubscriber, but okay. Like the Nike shoe example, I don't want shoes right now, but I'm not going to unsubscribe because I know on Black Friday, you're going to send me a coupon. So on my school list, I wouldn't be getting emails from 50 schools, but I might be getting emails from 12 because I'm still interested in them. So I would still let them accumulate.
And we see that most students stay with us, not super high click rates, but cumulatively, like you said, it makes a big difference. And we can see immediate results. We just sent a message about filing a FAFSA to applicants, not even admits, and saw an 8% jump in filing rates in 1 week from over and above what we would have expected on trend from a single email. It works.
What about texting?
Yeah, it's not what it once was. It had its moment where it was magic.
The golden channel.
It was so good. And you could text and everyone would respond immediately and engage and do what you needed them to do. And that is not the case anymore. We've all become much more comfortable with ignoring text.
I think the carrier filters have gotten a lot better.
So that's interesting. We're not noticing a significant decline in text deliverability. We're just seeing a decline in text responsiveness. And we try, because we care about deliverability, to be thoughtful in what we're texting and to whom we're texting. And we all do it. And partly because now every time you sign into a website, you get another text, the inbox starts growing. There are more spam texts, just they're phishing texts now, like there were phishing emails. So
yeah,
people are getting a bit more skeptical of their text box, but it's still a really great way, particularly once you've developed a relationship with a student. That's where it all takes place. That's it. That's the way.
I think 5 years ago, when we were texting prospective students, they thought that an adult was literally picking up a phone and punching in and texting them. And I think now they're a little more savvy to know, oh, this is just like email. This is some kind of mass thing. So they don't feel as much of an obligation to respond. I definitely get that. On the flip side, is there anything that you feel your team is currently struggling with in terms of marketing or could be doing better?
Oh, I think the struggle now is the same thing that we think brings value to the students, which is being wherever they are and need us to be, creates a challenge on the back end of one, keeping up with it all and keeping everything updated and making sure the right information is there. And then making sense of the data we get back from those sources in a way that allows us to bring that together and communicate with students properly. If they're only in one place, that's easy. But if they're in four or five different places looking at slightly different things, how do we make sure that we're treating them as a single human being and not acting like it's five different people with similar habits.
Can you give an example?
Sure. So particularly looking at student interaction and engagement, we can see who is involved and engaged in our Student Bridge site. We can see who's involved in our virtual programming site. We can see who is engaged on our website. And then we can see right through our CRM who's engaged with emails and texts. Is all that equal and even? And as counselors are looking at students and trying to connect with those who are the most interested, is one of those a more valuable measure of engagement than another? Is the content being consumed on Student Bridge different than the content or differently valuable than the content on our website? Or on another platform? If students are consistent in looking at the same thing everywhere, then that's an easy one. You know, we don't have exactly the same thing everywhere. They're slightly different. And what does that mean? It's just, there's just a lot of information for everybody and filtering through and making sense of it all.
What do you believe are some of the biggest misconceptions about enrollment marketing?
We get skeptical when someone encourages us to use a best practice. And that may sound a little counterintuitive, but what's a best practice? It's something that's been done and tested enough that a lot of people are doing it and early on had some success with it. By the time it becomes a best practice, it's probably an old practice and one that no longer stands out. So there are certainly companies that have made quite a lot of money selling formulas and best practices to where every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, I get 8 emails forwarded to me by another VP on campus who has a daughter who is a senior in high school that are exactly the same. I mean, you can swap out the, this is the school differential paragraph.
Right.
But it's
and the logo.
And the logo and the at whatever's between the at and the .edu and everything else is the same.
Yeah. Wow.
And at the same time, on the same day, in the same format, because that's the best practice. And it may work if your competitor's not using the same vendor.
Right.
Or the has the same playbook.
And it's not all the same target audience.
Yeah.
What are some things that you think other higher ed marketers are doing a great job with?
I don't pay a whole lot of attention to higher education. I am much more interested in seeing what other industries are doing in terms of marketing, because we're getting better in higher ed. I don't know that we're consistently a decade behind marketing practices now, but we're at least 2 to 3 years behind, maybe 4 or 5, what the rest of the world is doing. And so I don't really want to take inspiration from what higher ed has already figured out. I want to take inspiration from what the marketing leaders have figured out and look elsewhere for inspiration.
Is it your belief that enrollment marketers are conservative, like in terms of tactics?
I wouldn't use the word conservative. It's hard to say anything not positive about enrollment marketers because I know people in enrollment care deeply about students and student outcomes and the institutions for which they work. So there is great passion for the institutions. There is great passion in working with students. There is a huge desire to make a difference in the world. And I know that enrollment marketers are doing everything they know how to do their best. I also know enrollment marketers, for the most part, don't have big budgets for technology. They don't have big budgets for professional development. They don't have big budgets for additional training and certifications. Mm-hmm. They don't have big budgets for staff, which it takes a ton of people to do big time modern marketing. So I wouldn't say it's about an unwillingness to try new methods.
It's like a systemic lack of infrastructure.
Infrastructure, and that leads to people doing their best with their head down, trying to get it done and not having or taking the time to look up and see what's going on beyond. Mm-hmm. The CRM was a revelation to higher ed 15 years ago. Like, whoa, look at this. And it took a decade for everybody to get on board. But now everybody's using one of three. Almost everybody's using one.
One, yep.
And so here we go. Every application looks the same. Every web form looks exactly the same. It's all the same, which for students is nice from that side. It's a consistent experience. But do you have the ability to hire 3 full-time Slate staff to pump out things that are different than what other people are doing?
I think it's a really interesting perspective that you have of keeping your eye on other industries more than higher ed, because I feel like I see that more from people who come from other industries because they know what B2B and e-commerce and all these other players are doing. So I think it's really interesting that you have that perspective, being that you've taken the tour guide to SBP route.
Thanks. I am eternally unsatisfied and curious simultaneously. And I'm old school in that I still actually get magazines. I'm not so old school that I say I take magazines. That would really date me in a big way. But Fast Company and Wired are my two reads. And sure, I get the Chronicle, but I'll read it months later to see what people are complaining about. But that's interesting to me, what's going on out there and just the conversations in business and technology. and it gets the brain churning. And I'm very fortunate here at High Point to have incredible resources, and I know that. But at the same time, I'm not Apple. I don't have that marketing budget. There are pieces that I can take and pieces that I can't, but it's interesting to pay attention to that.
What do you see for the future of higher ed marketing?
I see catching up. I'm not alone in these thoughts. There are other people. And as we see more presidents come in from industry outside of higher ed, they are bringing awareness. As we're seeing presidents become more popular on corporate boards, they're getting a different level of insight into what's happening. And some of that's coming back to campus. And there are some new players in higher ed marketing who I think are doing really interesting work, who have gotten this.
Care to share some things that you've seen that you think are really phenomenal?
Integrated marketing, the end of the drip. And people have tried to pretend like they've ended that years ago, but we all really know that's still what most inquiry campaigns are. You know, every 7 days you get this and then you get that same message. That's still how most of this works in higher ed. But there are companies out there who are truly doing integrated marketing, where a click on a digital ad takes you to a unique landing page. The way in which you interact with that landing page determines which emails you get after the fact. The way in which you interact with those emails determines which digital ads you get to see again, or where you're driven to within the page. It's creating your profile to continue to change the kinds of information you receive, which then when you go back to the website is changing the content on the website, even within a single page, based on the way in which you're interacting with it. That's the Amazon experience. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason that higher education can't do it. And Amazon has billions of products. A big school has 200 majors.
But we were talking about earlier, takes people, takes time, takes money, takes much more sophisticated systems and integrations and the things that a lot of schools don't have.
And the first time you try and set that up and you realize instead of proofing one email this week, you have to proof 250 pieces of content to get that process started.
Or write the 250 pieces of content.
Yeah, then you have a big gulp moment and say, no, we can't do this. Let's send them inquiry email number 7. Now, I think it will result in students continuing to have more control over the process. And I think that's a good thing. I do think ultimately that will help students find institutions that are a better fit. The view book with perfectly curated pictures, it's a nice intro, but students are going to see through that really quickly. It is about letting the students really drive, and they're going to figure it out. They're going to go to the website and they're going to see what they need to see. And then they're going to go somewhere else and start following students on Instagram and seeing who's on Snapchat and what's out there and what it really looks like. And making their own decisions.
So related to finding the best fit, this might be a controversial question, but do you really believe, besides location, colors, and mascot, that there's really that much of a difference between one large public in one state versus one large public in another, or small private in one state versus one small private in another?
I think it's bigger than that. Most of higher education is doing the same thing. My guess is if I went on 10 campus tours, pick any college across the country, at least 9 of them would tell me how many volumes are in the library. Why does it matter how many volumes are in the library if every single one of them is available on a student's phone, plus millions of others that aren't at your school, and journals and everything else? If you still think that's important, it says a lot about the institution's ability to understand the state of what's going on and student mindset. When you look at recent data that show 50% of students under the age of 28 are living at home, there's a problem. I mean, recent college graduates are living, that's a problem. But when you see now the latest, I need to find the 22 data. But it was less than half of college graduates are employed within 6 months of graduation. There's a problem, and it's not a marketing problem. There's a fundamental higher education problem, and we've got to take it seriously. This is then easy for me to say, but we're different. But I think we've got the stats to show we are quite different. 98% of our students are employed in grad school within 6 months. We give students value beyond their degree in a major way. We make sure that they have tuition-free access to study abroad. We make sure they have tuition-free access to graduate programs if they desire, if that's the right next step for them. We make sure that they graduate with something more than a diploma, because every single one of the 2. Whatever million students that graduate in the United States with them will have a diploma that lists a degree on it and lists a major. Okay, so what? How do we help them stand out? How do we help them have the experiences they need, have the sense of character and values that they need, have the right mindset for the rest of their life? Mm-hmm. That's what's important. That's what we talk about on tour. That's what we talk about with students. And people respond.
If you could go back 5 or 10 years and give yourself advice, what would it be?
Yeah, I think the advice to myself would be, gosh, this is going to sound so freaking conceited, but just keep at it. You're doing the right thing. Keep learning. Keep being curious. Keep caring deeply about students and colleagues. The hard days are really going to be hard, but the other side is pretty great. Keep fighting the good fight. There are a few folks who work at schools whose yield rates are above 50%. Most of us in enrollment are not. And which means by design, you are told no more daily than yes. Mm-hmm. And that's true, I'll use a dirty word, sales everywhere. But there's also a different kind of compensation for sales everywhere. We have the best compensation, which is the opportunity to change lives. It doesn't get any better than that. But that also makes those no's even harder, because you are invested in that student. Oh my gosh, if you came here, what you would be able to do, the way it could impact your life. And so it's easy to get down on yourself in enrollment to say, today, those 3 kids withdrew or decided even not to apply or whatever it was. And right, what most colleges yield is under 20% now. So by definition, 4 out of every 5 students you admit is going to say no. That's no fun to hear no 4 out of 5 times. So it is easy to get down on yourself, to think, gosh, why is everybody withdrawing today? Or why is everybody not going to pay the deposit today? And you've got to work hard to focus on the good that's happening, mm-hmm. on the students who are coming. And there's a relatively new book called Chatter, and which defines, you know, chatter as the negative voices in your head. You've got to get really strong and good at ignoring the negative voices and really focusing on all the positive ones that lead to growth and opportunity.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.